And so this is where history and current events come together. As this is Black History Month, which I think can't be acknowledged and honored without the current time, without the affirmation that Black Lives Matter. And I believe that one of the ways white folks like me can affirm that Black Lives Matter is to learn about Black lives, to learn about Black life, and not just after a Black life has been unjustly taken, but as a matter of course. I've been doing a lot of my learning over the past 2 years by listening to podcasts, right? What else can you do when you're holed up in your apartment? Some are created and run by Black people, like Adrienne Marie Brown's Emergent Strategy and her collaboration with Toshi Regan, Octavia's Parables, and her sister Autumn Brown's How to Survive the End of the World. NPR's slightly less radical, but still very smart, Code Switch, and LeVar Burton Reads, where he reads children's stories every week, and Black Like Me with Madison's own Alex G. Some of them are hosted by white people who have deeply insightful conversations with Black people and other people of color, like Brené Brown's Dare to Lead. What I love about listening to these podcasts is not just the ability to learn about the perspectives and experiences of Black people without having to burden individuals I know with teaching me, but simply the exposure to Black voices that I don't get enough of in my life. I get to listen and learn across difference. I get to hear stories and ways of being that are so unlike mine. I get to practice curiosity and leaning into discomfort with nobody watching. I get to hear and practice and lean from people who have agreed to share their lives and their stories in public. I read Black authors too, especially fiction and historical fiction and science fiction, which let me experience the creativity that's born out of experiences I'll never have. My favorites right now are Isabel Wilkerson and Toni Morrison and Octavia Butler and N.K. Jemisin. I've been discovering some similar ways to learn about Black lives and Black life in Madison. The public library, as I'm sure many of you know, has Richard Harris's book, Growing Up Black in South Madison, just ready to be taken out. You can get an email, which I've done, with links to current stories from Madison 365, which is a news organization that, quote, uses excellent journalism to start conversations, find real and lasting solutions, build community, invite action, and encourage emerging leaders in Greater Madison's communities of color, and foster dialogue between members of diverse communities. It's run by a culturally diverse team of journalists and editors and interns and business leaders. One learning tool I discovered on their website was a history of Black Madison compiled by Michael Johnson, the president and CEO of Boys and Girls Clubs of Dane County. And there are classes and events, of course, to attend that you can learn in a more interpersonal way, like the 10-week series offered by the Madison, Wisconsin Institutes for the Healing of Racism, Inc. They aim to raise awareness about the history and pathology of racism, they say, and help heal racism in individuals, communities, and institutions in Madison through facilitated and voluntary sharing in multiracial space. The goal for me is to make the lives of Black people and other people of color more visible and to get into relationship, whether that means learning through means offered publicly by people I don't know, or building what we more often think as relationship through personal contact. And I'm sorry to say that I don't have a lot of personal contact across difference in my own life right now, at least not here in Madison. I'm more connected with Black and other people of color in Unitarian Universalism. The relationships I do have here developed after Tony Robinson was shot and killed in his home by police officer Matt Kenney just shy of 7 years ago. Can't believe it's been 7 years. That event in March of 2015 was a catalyst for the Black Lives Matter movement in Madison, including the founding of the Young, Gifted, and Black Coalition. And we at JRUUC, we attended protests. We supported YGB and Tony's family. We spoke publicly about what some call a police-involved shooting and others, including me, call murder. I talked with Sharon Irwin, Tony's grandmother, last week, and she offered me some stories about him to share with you. My vision for today's service was to bring you some stories of people in Madison, people living in Black and communities of color. And because I don't have so many of these contacts, Sharon was the only person I felt comfortable reaching out to and talking with. She was generous with her time, and she was open with her emotions as we talked for almost 2 hours. And I was so touched by that and drawn into her life and Tony's life and the work that she continues to do that will forever change how I think. She said he flitted everywhere. He had friends everywhere. She said 1,000 people came to his funeral. One of them was a man who lived next door when Tony lived in Sun Prairie, who Sharon said had been racially prejudiced. And he told her at Tony's funeral, "I didn't like your family to begin with. Your boy came over and shoveled my walk every time it snowed, and he didn't ask because I would have told him no. I just want you to know I remember him, and maybe I was wrong about your family." Relationship. Tony was generous and impulsive, often giving away his money if others were in need, and then not having enough for himself. "It's just money," he would say to his grandma. Sharon said he lived in a different world, and that living touched a lot of people's hearts. He played football, and he was rough and gruff, but he always made sure that his teammates were okay. She said he took care of his siblings too, and he knew that's how it would always be. That wasn't a romanticized relationship though. They fought often, as siblings do, but they were still close. His sister Kyla, tragedy upon tragedy, was killed in a car accident in September of 2020, and Sharon is sure that Tony was there to meet her on the other side. He'd babysit for others, have lines of kids following him to the playground, and he could be funny. She told me that when he was living with her, he would get up at 2 a.m. and go into the kitchen and open the refrigerator door and just pull up a chair and just start eating out of the fridge. She'd say to him, "Tony, why don't you make a plate?" She'd say to him, "Terrell, why don't you make a plate?" Terrell is the name that his family uses for him. She'd say, "Terrell, why don't you make a plate?" And he would say, "No, you'll just make me wash it." He had an infectious laugh. He introduced her to lots of music, and they would dance in her living room. And he was a people pleaser, she said. And that sometimes led to making bad choices to try to fit in. And so that part of Kenny's reading is true for Tony as well. There were mistakes, and there were things that he shouldn't have done that he knew he shouldn't have done. And he was curious about Sharon's sense of justice at the same time. He used to ask her, "Why are you like that? Why do you care about everything?" And then a few months before he died, she says, he started talking spiritual with her. Those are her words, asking, "Who is God?" And he started taking mushrooms to go on a spiritual journey because he wanted to find God. You can say what you will about that choice, but that's where he was. Sharon says that God was already there. and that God gave him a chance of how to die, a choice, and that he chose to go in a way that brought awareness about injustice. This is why Sharon carries on the work. He asked her to cleanse him a week before he was killed. And she shared with me about that ritual and how important it was to him. He didn't know why when she asked. She said, sure, Terrell, but why? And he said, I don't know. I just feel like I need to be cleansed. She says he said goodbye to people. And that after years of her asking him, who did this to you? Who did this to you as a way of reflecting on personal responsibility and accountability, right? He would complain about something and she'd say, who did this to you, boy? And he'd say, ah, I guess I did. And he had a hard time with that. And right before he died, she says, he told her, I get it. I did this, when they were talking about one of his poor choices. It's too late to get to know Tony in any way other than this, through memory, because Tony has joined those ancestors that are part of our history, part of Black history, part of Madison's history. My hope is that sharing about his life might offer us some inspiration to build other relationships before it's too late. I'm so grateful that Sharon said yes when I called her. Relationships with people we've been taught to fear, as Kenny says, or ignore, or dehumanize. Relationships that can change our minds and our hearts as we open to difference. Relationships that can help us understand all the implications of the words Black Lives Matter. Talking with Sharon last week reopened that door for me. I close my reflections this morning with a prayer for white people, written by my colleague, the Reverend Ellen Quadras. Sheltered in our homes or going to work at risk for week after week after week, we are edgy, tired, a little raw. We are tender, vulnerable, open, a little more open than usual. Those of us who are white, who before might have been distracted, who before might have been too busy, who before might have been preoccupied with our lives, are noticing ways injustice has happened to people of color the same way, again and again and again. Now we have become aware. Please, may we be aware. May we not lose awareness. May we not get distracted. May we not turn away. May we open, really open. Accepting the invitation to change our minds, our hearts, our world. When we encounter calls to defund the police, when we encounter calls for reparations, when we hear follow our lead from people of color, may we listen. May we learn, may we be open, even if it means rethinking everything we thought we knew about the world. We have, all of us as humans, an enormous opportunity to change one of the oldest injustices in history, to change everything. May we stay vulnerable, may we stay tender, may we take action. Eyes and hearts and minds open. May it be so, and may we be so.